podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome back to more My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price. So on the show today, Steve Bujaya, brilliant stand-up comic, sickeningly young. He's about 10 years younger than me. But he's very, very funny, and I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. A little bit of admin. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. I've got loads more episodes to come, but I think we're going to have a little mid-term break. Maybe a half-time sort of vibe, a reading week or two, maybe 2 weeks off, and you can listen back to episodes you've not listened to, or listen to other podcasts. You're free to do that if you must. So this will be the last episode before a little half-term break. Steve Bujaya, it's so much fun to talk to this guy. I always enjoy catching up with him. If you've not heard of him before, look up his TED talk on teaching at a summer camp in the States. Really, really interesting, funny man. And the beginning of the episode was quite a weird one. We were just sort of talking about the podcast and who first came on and all sorts of nonsense. So there isn't really a kind of big old hello and welcome from me this week. We just sort of started talking and, well, you'll hear how it evolves. Enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. Do you know who the first guest on this show was, who I couldn't believe agreed to do it?
Jeff Bezos.
Yes. He came on. He was like, let's talk. I'll talk about all the things.
And he gave you his password and he's like, oh, that breaks all the rules at Amazon.
Mate, his what do you think Jeff Bezos' password is? There's some speculation right
now. I mean,
there.
It can't be as secure as you'd think it. Like, I bet it's just like Jeff 10, you know?
I bet he adds a zero, an extra zero every other day.
You know when you find out a famous person's email address and you're like, oh, that's just your name at hotmail.com. It's a bit underwhelming that they haven't got a more cryptic email address.
There is a brilliant one, which David Attenborough's. Do you know what David Attenborough's actual email address is?
Please tell me. Yeah. Oh, that is fantastic.
Isn't it just? Isn't it just?
Did he think of that or has someone done that?
I don't. Has he got a team? Maybe. One would think he's probably got a team, but then he's a sharp guy. He's a sharp individual, Attenborough.
That is so smart.
I know, mate. I know. Well, you're still pissing around on Hotmail like me.
What that is my like burner email that I use for signing up to stuff. So I've got a Gmail account that does the business stuff.
I sort of think of my Hotmail account as kind of like a sex slave in the basement who just is just awful things happening to it. Do you know what I mean? I let it take terrible punishments.
Just all your dark fantasies get taken out on your Hotmail account while your Gmail thinks you're like a really nice guy.
Yes.
Gmail's like, he's so smart and polite. And then Hotmail's like, you kidding? You see what he signs up to? It's disgusting. I mean, I just let it deal with the most amount of spam you can, like from, you know, garden furniture websites, you know, anything I've signed up to that I don't really want to hear from, that's Hotmail.
Yeah. Our secret identities as told by our email addresses. All right, well, let's find out about your true identity and we're going to dive into your Amazon account. Let's go back, first of all. Right, I'm going back to the beginning of your Amazon purchase history, as we always do on this show.
This is going to be... I literally cannot remember anything that I've bought.
Well, let's remind you. Let's see if this jogs your memory. 2006, three items ordered in 2006.
So I'm 16 at this point.
Oh, good. God, so 16-year-old Steve Bujaya. And yeah, that makes sense. You've bought a lot of GCSE revision guides.
That does make sense, actually. There you go. That matches up.
So you've got the GCSE double science physics revision guide. You've got a GCSE French revision guide. We've got chemistry. We've got biology. So look, we're looking at sciences and we're looking at languages as well.
So what they were, mate, was they were my weak subjects.
That's a lot of subjects.
Yeah. And like science and language is not me. Like maths I can do, you know, like more written stuff I was good at, but the science stuff I couldn't do it. And that's probably why I resorted to throwing money at the situation.
Yeah. Well, that was the sort of analog version of getting a tutor. Everyone these days seems to get private tutors or does a Zoom tutor. But this is the chalk and slate version of a tutor.
Yeah, I mean, my mum couldn't afford a tutor, but she was happy for me to buy my own revision material on Amazon.
Thanks, mum.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll dedicate your first book to her for helping you.
Yeah. My book about science, which actually I'm now a genius.
It's well, I was going to say, because you go on to what did you go on to study once you left school?
I did politics, philosophy, and economics. So
the old PPE classic.
The old PPE, not in the not in Oxford though, so it's not proper. But I did it in Manchester, which is just slightly less.
You did
less prestigious
Mickey Mouse PPE. Yeah. You don't get a degree, you get a pair of ears at the end.
Exactly. But yeah, it was the proper Manchester uni. It just was, you know, I could tell people do PPE, but I just don't need to mention where from. Although, to be honest, I think it makes me a lot more likeable if I don't do it at Oxford.
People get very, and I'm not saying you are, but I have discovered people are quite defensive about where they went to university.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's because I guess it's in many ways, it's the first time you really choose a big movement in the chess game that is life. This is the first time you're really moving your queen and your king when you choose your university. It's a big statement you're making about yourself, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think also they choose you, so it's actually quite personal, isn't it? So Warwick, for example, I can't sit here and tell you I went to Warwick because they rejected me.
Guess where I went.
Oh, fuck off, Tom Price. Did you go to Warwick? You know what,
dude.
I think it's a shit uni. I think it's a shit uni for people who are too scared to go to a city.
Yes, that's what it was. It's what small town people think of as a city. That's exactly
the campus is basically Centre Parks. When I went round it, it was like, oh, this is just like being in Centre Parks. There's no jeopardy here at all. And at the time, I was an 18, I liked it. But when I was immersed in the sort of realness of Manchester, I was like, no, this is what I'm about.
Where are you from then originally? Where were you leaving to go to university?
Bishop Stortford in Hertfordshire. So just a sort of very commuter market town. And I was terrified of going to a city, you know, because I didn't like clubbing. I didn't like drinking that much. So I saw, that isn't going to be really me. I'd rather go to Warwick, where all the sort of wusses go.
That's what I did.
I think probably if they'd let me in, I would have ended up there and my life would be very different now. Maybe I'd be a DJ on Magic.
you can dream, mate. Okay, so we're both small market town boys because I went to a market. I grew up in a market town as well.
And that was
Monmouth in South Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Similar sort of, it was a commuter town for Cardiff, really. But it does it does define you. Small town Britain is an interesting thing. So many people come from towns, but they seem to shed that town skin very quickly.
Yeah, and also I'm always quite jealous of people, particularly comics, who have like an identity. You know, like they come from Liverpool and they're a Scouser, or they come from Newcastle and they're a Geordie. And it's like, I just have this like, you know, home counties town. And just can't really put a fan base from Bishop Stortford.
Yes.
So I'm always a little bit envious of people who have that kind of strong, even London to some extent, you know, you have a feeling of being in London.
Yes.
But yeah, Bishop Stortford's very sort of, you know, commutery. Everyone works in London. They all get up at 6 a.m. and go to the train station and park the car in the overpriced car park. You know, everyone has that lifestyle. I wasn't exposed. You know, I was talking to someone the other day that I didn't really know anyone creative when I was growing up. Like everyone I knew, all my parents, my friends' parents and stuff, were all like serious lawyers or like quite successful, but like all just like office-y people. And then I met someone who was saying that they hung out with poets and writers. And I was like, oh my God, that must have been amazing to actually know people who like did something creative, because it just was so alien to me.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that is exactly the same as me.
Really?
This is something I've never really dug into this before, but this, and it's born, I think the reason that it's hard to complain out about it is because it's born out of tremendous middle-class privilege to grow up in a very, very nice small town. So, that, you know, I have to very much apologise for that before I can go on and moan about the fact that there is no easily accessible, gritty identity to be had, whether it's London, whether it's, you know, growing up by the sea, or like you say, Liverpool or Edinburgh, or any of these big sort of cities which come with this kind of almost ready-made sense of self.
We are in this
kind of middle-class fog. It's weird.
Yeah, and it feels like the fact that my middle-class town was similar to your middle-class town just makes it even worse, because it's like there's just loads of them around and we've all got these same boring existences. And actually, yeah, I was actually very happy there, but it's just not a place for creativity, I don't think. It's a very like... it suffocates you a bit with that lifestyle. And some people love it, I guess. I've got friends who are still there and are happy, I think. Not that soon to them, obviously.
I was going to say, that is good friends, very strong friends, very close to them.
I think once you move out, I'm done, you know. And also, my mum doesn't live anymore, so I've got no reason to go back, other than to occasionally sell tour tickets.
This is quite right, too. This is an indication that you are compiling the qualifications to get out of there at this point in 2006, buying your revision books. How did you get on
on in your... I mean, this is a conversation I've not had since I was about 17. What did you get for your GCSEs?
Did all right. I think I got 3 A stars, 6 A's and a B.
This isn't a podcast. This has become a conversation in a student bar in, for me, the late 90s. So April 2006, you have bought Athens 2004 on the PlayStation 2.
Oh, yes. That is, the Olympic game. I loved that game. And to run really fast, you had to just tap the X and the O really quickly. And I don't mind telling you, I was very good at it. Like, I had extremely good fingers at speed, which, you know, has... not served me well in later life, but that particular skill has been fantastic.
Also, who knew that when you were typing XOXO on your PS2, that was great, you know, great practice for putting some affection at the end of a text message.
That's so true. Yeah.
Several years later, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That is, yeah.
It's making you a more loving person digitally.
Yeah, just me, just XOXO. Why'd you put so many, Steve? Well, I was running the 100 metres at the time when I wrote great. It.
How much do you love me? I love you 200 metres hurdles.
Fuck! I did a 1500 metres for you. Yeah. Good game, though. Good game. I used to play with my brother. I think we got the previous one as well, Sydney. But that won't have been on Amazon. That would have been at play.com, maybe.
Play.com.
Do you remember play.com? The real loser of the internet story.
Really is like a digital Woolworths, wasn't it?
Digital Woolworths. Yeah, really sad story, actually, because I like what they did. I like how they did it, but clearly not enough people did.
I remember the enthusiasm of play.com. Amazon.com or .co.uk, it's your choice, had a sort of... Oh, yeah, Amazon's good. Whereas Play.com had... Oh, have you tried Play.com? Do you know what I mean? People had a bit more enthusiasm and excitement when it was Play.com.
It was a bit alternative. It was quirky, you know? It was like... I don't know what the equivalent is now, but it's like getting you're going to Shoreditch to buy your clothes or something. I don't know. Somewhere different, you know? somewhere cool.
I like getting nostalgic about websites. That's all we've got to be nostalgic about now. Digital space.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else I would... Play.com was the big one I miss. I used to go on wrestling websites a lot that I miss. You know, there was the website I used to go on called WrestlingExposed.com. And I looked it up recently and it's just gone. They've got no more exposing of wrestling.
Why would you take that down? So were you into your wrestling? Were you a WWF man?
So into wrestling. I was like, oh my God. It was from like 7 years old, I was just obsessed with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And which is weird that I related to a sort of Texas Republican so hard. But I did. I just used to go when they came to Earl's Court in London. I'd go, and I remember being so excited the first time I went. I made myself sick. Like, I was literally so excited I vomited, and that's how much I loved wrestling. And here's a funny talking about purchases. Yeah. When Woolworths closed down, as aforementioned, me and my friend Joel saw that they were selling wrestling belts for £1 because they were just getting rid of the stock. Mm. And we honestly thought, well, this is a brilliant investment. We are going to buy, you know, like the replica toy belts. Mm. We're going to buy 50 of these belts for £50. Because like, they sell for like 20 quid. We're like, this is so smart.
Oh,
we're
my God.
We're the smartest people ever.
You see, this makes sense because here on 2nd of December 2007, you've bought Transport Economics 4th edition. So this is a guy who understands economics, and we see it now in this Woolworth story. Go on.
Brilliant. I mean, it was around that time, actually. It was probably, maybe I was 18, because my main memory was we bought 50 belts thinking, yeah, we'll shift these on eBay like so quickly. Mm. And it took 3 years. And Joel had them in his garage for 3 years when I went to university, and every so often we'd get a message going, someone's bought a belt, and we'd be like, oh, that's great. Didn't even speak to Joel at the end of university, and he still had some of the belts that we'd bought.
what were they going for if you bought them for £1 each?
Well, you know, we wanted to sell them for like 15, 20, but in the end, they were going for about £5-6, you know, and not including postage, you know, we're just giving them away for free, really. It was an absolute disaster.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got to fail your way up. This is how Alan Sugar started, selling belts from Woolworths in the garage. It's very similar thing. Amstrad-esque behaviour from Steve Brugea on My Mate Bought a Toaster there. All right, so that's 2007. And here's an interesting question, and I'm only asking this because I'm kind of applying this to myself, but I think that it was the wrestling, because I was into wrestling when I was a kid. Not so much that I was physically sick. Like,
yeah, you're not a real fan, but yeah, go on.
That is absolutely delicious. Like, just the, how old were you when this happened, by the way? When you were
like 19? No, I was probably 8 or 9. Just, and I was staying at my dad's house, and because he was taking me, and I just got myself so excited in the morning of it that I've just vomited everywhere. And he was like, "Oh, maybe you're too ill to go." I'm like, "No, it's the opposite. I need to go because I'm ill."
I can imagine you sort of wiping the sick from your chin. "No, Dad. No, I'm fine, Dad."
Just honestly, this is happy vomit. It's like happy tears. This is smiley vomit.
Oh God. But I really fell for Americana because of the wrestling. That is what really got me into Americana stuff. And this brings us back to what we talked about at the beginning. You end up going on the I was about to say scout camp. It's not scout camp. You end up going to America to do this thing which you talked about in the TED Talk. So do you think
summer camp? Yeah.
Yeah, summer camp. So do you think that the wrestling was a kind of gateway drug to the summer camp moment?
Maybe. I mean, I definitely liked America and I was excited about it. But I think the summer camp thing more came about because I was obsessed with not wasting my summers in between university, because I was just a bit of a geek. Like, when I just like wanted the best CV imaginable so that when I applied for my civil service job that I was sort of destined to become, I would have a really good CV. That was basically what I was obsessed with. And also I wanted to have a fun summer. But then obviously I discovered stand-up comedy and it just, I guess, ruined my life and took me off course. And, you know, unfortunately, the Comedy Store doesn't really care whether you've been to the summer camp when you were 19. It's they don't. Don Moore doesn't check that CV. But
if there was a CV for comedians, it would have to include more things like lack of parental love.
Childhood neglect.
I suffered childhood neglect from 1989 to 1996. Excellent. That's a good 7 years, good run of childhood. So that's hugs. Good.
Yeah,
for
I think
7 years.
You can do
years.
A 10.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're through.
Yeah, I got bullied in year 8. Oh, that's great. Yeah, that would do really well. You can have a room in the Pleasance.
You've got a parental death. You're headlining, mate. It's absolutely dreaming.
Yeah.
2009, right, Steve Bajaya. We're moving on. 2009. I love this because I love the name of this product, but also what it looks like. You spent £6.74, right? And this is when you're living in Manchester. So this is when you're at university doing Mickey Mouse PPE.
Yeah.
I'll get tweets about that. And you bought the Trust MC1500 design microphone. Now this is, to describe this microphone, this is like a microphone you might see at the reception area in a supermarket if you have to go and complain about something in a supermarket. It has a kind of fat bass unit, and then there's just a stick going straight up. You can imagine someone pressing the button on it and just making an announcement: all aisles. We have a code 6 in the fruit and veg department.
It's obviously not expensive. It's £6. I can't think what that would be. When was it? 2009.
2009 here, mate. Yeah.
What month we're talking?
We're talking Feb. We're talking 13th of Feb. So it's the day before Valentine's Day. Maybe this was
2009. Let's think what I was doing. Oh, maybe it's a Valentine's present for me. I can't think of what that was. I mean, it certainly wouldn't have been. I was very single, so it wouldn't have been a Valentine's present. I think that was the Valentine's Day that I went on a date with a girl who I was obsessed with, and my friend had to come with me with her friend. So it sort of made it a double date, but they weren't dating; they were just friends. But that was the only way that I would had the guts to go, and we just spent the date talking, and it became very clear that it was just a double friendship date. It's awful. Anyway, I don't know where the microphone. I don't know what the microphone was about. You know what it might have been actually. I had a student radio show as part of my quest to have the best CV. I had a student radio show, and I became the station manager. But don't worry about that. So it might have been that I was recording stuff in my bedroom, maybe for my show. That makes sense.
This is how it works, though. This is what I was like. If you are the market town non creative boy trying to break into a creative world. Hey guys, who wants to do admin? I'll do it. I'll take the admin on. Yeah.
Yes.
Let me do that.
Absolutely. Like I was so into the idea of being a station manager that I was like, yeah, I can do all the spreadsheets. I'll schedule the thing. And everyone's like, you know, this isn't the fun bit of radio. I'm like, no, I love it. I love it. Let me do it in a meeting. Let's have a meeting.
Yeah. I'm working in radio. So we're in 2009. Steve, you're at Manchester University. You're running the student radio station. October 2010, you've bought an absolute classic. It's come up once or twice before on My Mate Bought a Toaster. I had one as well. The Flip Video Ultra Camcorder Second Generation.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, I only got rid of it about 6 months ago. I've used it the whole time. I've recorded all my Edinburgh previews on it. I've taken it to every Edinburgh and Melbourne or whatever. It's always been with me, that flip camera. It's served me very, very well.
It's so, they're so great because it's basically a USB stick with a camera attached to it. And
yeah,
The simplicity of it.
It just works. It just works.
Oh, it just worked. It just worked. It's got absolutely loads of reviews. Hundreds of reviews. Brought this product to use on my granddaughter. I'm not sure that's how you'd...
On your granddaughter.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the best semantics there.
No. Wow, that's not what the USB stick's for, but okay. God.
I find it fantastic as it just slips in my pocket and I take it everywhere with me for that unpredicted moment. Then I just plug it in the computer and it instantly produces the video, which I make into a movie and send to my daughter in Australia. #.
That's nice. I mean, you've got to think, this is before camera phones, really, like proper camera phones. So it was pretty magical to be able to just record something.
It was a glimpse of the future when before we'd get bored of it. Because obviously now I joylessly film things. You know, like my kids were playing a stupid game with each other last night and I just started filming it because I was like, this is beautiful. But inside I was like, this is beautiful. I'd better film it. Whereas if I'd had a flip 13 years ago, I'd have gone, grab the flip quick, when I record this, it's really lovely what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? This is when it was still
precious.
Yeah, it's
almost too easy now. It's too easy.
It's too easy.
Yeah, I get that. The thing with my flip camera is I used to have stuff on there. I'd be nervous to delete any videos because I'd be in between laptops and I was like, oh no, that video is really precious. So basically I just end up no space on the flip camera because I was keeping stupid rubbish, you know?
Yeah, digital hoarding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God knows what was on there. Nothing exciting.
Do you have, I've got a lot of hard drives with, it's interesting, you still can't say that without it sounding somehow dirty. It's a shame that people...
Sounded like an incredible humble brag. I've got a lot of hard drives. The one thing you need to know about me is I have an abundance of hard drives.
Tom Price, terabytes of the stuff. But I have, I'd always do this often on Amazon. I'd buy gigabytes of hard drives and I'd stick on the photos and the videos. And usually, you know, 10 years plus ago, I'd put on various pirated videos. And they just sit there. I'm never going to put them on again. Like, I don't know. I just feel like it's undermined.
Completely unnecessary, isn't it? I mean, I once had a hard drive, everything on there, and I just once dropped it on a stone floor, and that was it. Gone. Everything gone. Oh. Actually, it made it less secure putting it in that place in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you'd printed them out, they'd have been perfectly safe.
Yeah.
All right, 2011 then. You know, still in Manchester, you can tell because you've bought a Xbox 360 wireless controller, still working hard.
Wow, did I?
£22.49 on that.
Well, this is when I'm starting to earn money, isn't it? You can tell. I think that was when I was living, 2011. Yeah, I just graduated. I was living still like a student in Fallowfield, Manchester, with my friends who were doing like 4th years, and I was trying to be a stand-up comedian. And probably my first thought was to get an Xbox controller because I had a lot more time on my hands than I had previously.
I'm going to need that.
I remember for that house, we got a TV that was like a back projector TV because we got it free off Freecycle and we had to go and collect it. And it was the biggest thing I've ever seen. You know, like the projector was actually in the back of the TV. So it honestly went back about 0.5 metre, like not exaggerating. And
what?
It just sat in our tiny little lounge. It was ridiculous. It was huge.
The race for screen estate is insane, isn't it? That started to recess a bit now, hasn't it? But there was the hyperinflation, to use a term that a PPE student will be very happy with. We had a kind of Weimar Republic scenario with TV sizes, didn't we? It was insane.
Yes, and now I feel like we've realised that actually the size of your TV doesn't make you happier.
It doesn't
make you happier.
I found myself buying a massive TV and actually in a tiny, tiny flat and actually having to physically move my head to watch the action. It was so big. That, like, that's not how you shouldn't watch
the TV.
The
TV was bigger than your eyes were capable of seeing.
Yeah, it was weird. I was literally having to flip my head from side to side. Do you know what I mean? That's
I mean, you know the solution to that. Bigger house.
Yeah, bigger house.
Don't blame the TV.
Maybe that's why people move to market towns in the first place. Maybe that's...
to be able to see their TV. Yeah, maybe.
I can't, it's them always. I can't, it's them always.
Love you, pretty baby, and I want you for the rest of my day. I want this name no more.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
First of March 2011, as you're getting towards the end of your degree. Some good new Labour stuff here. Peter Mandelson, the third man, life at the heart of New Labour. Brown at Tempo.
Yeah.
Anthony Sullivan. Now, is this because of your degree or because you were interested in it?
No, this is dissertation time.
Okay.
This is, I was doing, my dissertation was on Gordon Brown. and it was about, it was like, basically saying Gordon Brown was a good prime minister. That was kind of the vibe. I was very pro New Labour at the time.
That's nothing to be ashamed of. You are in a safe New Labour space, certainly.
Sure.
In terms of this recording, my listeners may not agree, but I'm, yeah.
They had the ups and downs, didn't they? but I felt Gordon Brown was a tragically overlooked man. You know, he seemed nice, you know, he just seems like a good guy.
He does now, but what is it with this thing, Milibanditis, where when they're in charge, you think they're dickheads. As soon as they leave,
yeah.
You're like, you're a lovely Ed Miliband. Yeah. Go and have another go. William Hague did it as well. He was a terrible leader, but became
yes.
Hague was a pretty moderate.
And like Ed Balls as well. Ed Balls got it big time.
Big time. It's, again, a reverse Clegg. Fucking hell, it's a big time reverse Clegg because he's
that's true.
Become monstrously tainted by his Facebook
yes.
stuff. But do you ever think about, would you ever dive into politics?
I have thought about it, actually. I think I would love to. Because I just like I don't know, I genuinely get excited about politics and policy and changing people's lives and stuff. But then I also think, it's quite serious, isn't it? It's quite a lot of work, that. And I don't know, I've got the, I think after doing 10 years of being a comedian and writer, I think I just can't take things that seriously. Can't be that sincere for that long.
Yeah, and imagine being in the House of Commons and just saying, just starting to use your stand-up skills on the opposition leader. Like, yeah, your mum, you know what I mean? You can't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Doing the Hotmail stuff, doing the Hotmail Gmail routine at the dispatch box. I think in the future I would like to be more involved. I often think about going to Labour Party meetings and canvassing, and that is something I want to do, but I never do it. Like, it gets right to the election, I'm like, I've got an Edinburgh show though. All right, we'll wait another 4 years. Maybe I'll change that.
Couldn't agree more. I am a member of a political party. And the number of emails I get about local canvassing arrangements, about local elections to various committees and boards, it's fucking endless and confusing and boring.
Yeah.
And if you want to become an MP, you need to wade through that treacle for a decade or more.
Yeah, you've got to like open, it's like comedy actually, you've got to sort of be an open spot politician for 10 years going around the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I don't know if the prize at the end of it's worth it.
No, well, that's exactly my point. And at the end of it, you get to be
hated
and get so much abuse.
Yeah.
You know.
But like all my friends who did PP with me at Manchester are like now civil servants, or they, you know, work for political like organisations and stuff. So they're all like got really serious jobs. And sometimes when we meet up and they're like debating the world's issues, I sort of like catch myself going, I used to care about this. Like, I did really genuinely have so many opinions about this stuff, but I just don't as much. Like, I still have opinions, but I just don't feel as, you know, I want to talk about, you know, like the latest sitcom that's come out. I don't know what changed. I don't know what point that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's odd, isn't it? Do you think it's when you kind of find your little corner of the world that you're really happy in, and you shut all the windows and draw all the curtains, and you're kind of like, yeah, I'm in my bit now.
Yeah, and I'm with the comedy nerds now, and I'm not leaving.
It's strange. Yeah. You sort of you become kind of thematically tribal. These are my bits. I'm not coming over to your stuff anymore. It's so true.
Yeah.
And you hear people talk about, and it's not even big issues. Could be stuff that you used to like as a kid, like certain sports and stuff. And you just hear your friends talk about it, and you're like, no, I've absolutely left this behind now, lads.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, lads. I haven't got an opinion on Stone Cold Steve Austin anymore.
that That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. You've got to have an opinion on Stone Cold Steve Austin.
He does present a new show actually about, it's like a World's Strongest Man kind of show, and I saw him on that, and he's doing all right for himself.
Yeah. I'm glad he's well.
Yeah.
7th of March 2012, one order placed in this year, and it is a defining stand-up order. This is the...
Oh, here we go.
This is, you know, I don't want this podcast to become too stand-up-y.
No.
Because, you know, we do talk about... but, you know, when you're talking about the lives of comedians, it's inevitable that they will always buy a Casio Men's digital bracelet watch, which is a...
There it is. That's the moment.
The vibrating
watch.
That
is the turning point.
This is putting the gown on and throwing your mortarboard in the air and graduating and becoming a comedian. This is a big moment.
That is it. That, you're right. This is amazing. It sort of pinpoints the moment my life changed. Yeah, that watch is what Hills Jago at Moose Moose told me to get. Mm-hmm. So I got it. And I then actually upgraded to a different standard watch, but I do still use the vibrating watch.
Yeah, yeah. Because when you're on stage, this is the thing, you'll get a tight time limit, and it can be anything from 8 minutes, 20 minutes, sometimes 25-30 minutes if you're doing sets. And one of the biggest taboos on the stand-up circuit, certainly in this country, is overrunning. And yes. That is, you just cannot do it. So what's great
and
about this,
looking at your phone or asking,
yeah, yeah,
how long you've been on.
Did you ever hear about what Boothby Graffo used to do?
No.
This is like 20 plus years ago. He'd come on stage with a massive countdown clock, a big old analog round countdown clock. Set it to 20 minutes, hit it, and it was behind him so the audience could see it, and it would have a bell that would go off.
Wow.
It would have a bell that would go off at exactly 20 minutes. And because he knew his set so well, he would start the most incredible story at 18 minutes. The most incredible, funny story with the most wonderful developing plot. And a series of almost, you'd hear the audience gasping with, oh my God, what's going to happen? And he'd always take the story to the point of, oh, the big reveal's about to happen.
Yeah.
And then the clock would go off.
Oh, that's amazing.
And he'd pick it up and he'd walk off stage.
That is so funny.
Just leave them.
I love that. I mean, you do have that. When your watch does go off and you're mid-routine, you're like, oh, I've misjudged this. This is... I can't end now. It's a weird ending. I've had so many like that.
That's often when I would become at my funniest, when I'd done my time. I would be like... What? Yeah, I'd feel the watch go off.
In the green room.
Afterwards. Well, yeah, I'm definitely one of those. But no, the thing would buzz and I'd think, I've done 20 minutes, I can relax. And then all these lovely, spontaneous, freeing thoughts would pop into my head. I'd be like, oh, why? Basically, l'esprit de l'escalier while still on stage. And I'd be like, oh,
yeah,
let it go,
yeah. Let it go. You should have faked it and have it vibrate in at 1 minute and just riffed for, just yes, pretended you were overrunning by 19 minutes.
Yes.
But yeah, what a lovely moment in my Amazon history to know that's when I really took the plunge.
But here's the question. When you get to the stage you're at now, so this is, you know, 7 or so years ago, what is the next obsession? When you are a successful, established, you know, doing very well stand-up comic, where do you put that energy now?
That's a good question. I don't know where that I think maybe it just dilutes a bit because you're just a bit older and
and jaded. Just get a dog.
Yeah, I just got a right move a lot. I don't know if that's I don't know if that counts. I look at houses I can't afford.
Is in,
that,
market towns, in market towns, in market towns.
No, not in market towns. It's usually not London. I just look in like boroughs. I'm like, I'd love to live in Walthamstow, and then look at houses that I just can't afford to buy. That's my new passion, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird. But I'm exactly the same. And some people call that jaded. I think that's sort of been quietly content, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you're sort of living in a delusion. a Walthamstow delusion. That's my next Edinburgh show is called, actually.
I think you should open up a little sort of artisan bakery called Walthamstow Delusion, just on the high street there.
Yeah, but weirdly open it in Lambeth, just to confuse it. Ooh, my mate bought a toaster. My mate bought a
toaster. 2014, 28th of April 2014. Now, this is interesting. You bought Bill Idelson's writing class, a script writing curriculum. On the Kindle.
Ah, yes. That was when I was really getting into script writing. That's when I was like, right, I could do stand-up in the evenings, but I need to do something else in the day. And I got fully immersed in... That's probably what my passion is now, actually. Like, geeking out over sitcoms and script structure and all that kind of stuff.
And it's fair to say, teeing you up for a massive show-off, it's fair to say in the last few months, that's come to fruition quite nicely.
Well, yes, I have now got a sitcom, yes, yeah. That has helped. Yeah. But, you know, we're seeing the early stage of that. Back in 2013, I had to start learning, you know, and only in 2021 do I get an ITV2 sitcom.
There you go, kids. There you go. Wait another 7 years and you could get ITV1.
Yeah, or maybe if I'd bought it in hardback rather than on Kindle, I'd be on ITV1 by now.
That is fantastic, though. Congratulations on your sitcom.
Thank you. I'm beyond excited.
Of course. You're quite right, too. I mean, it's I'd say, the pinnacle for anyone trying to be any kind of writer or do anything comedically is to get a sitcom up and running.
Yeah, it was always the aim. It was always the aim. And I feel so lucky and I'm so excited for it to come out. And I'm really proud of it. And it's obviously an up and down experience. But overall, it's just, I just feel such elation that I've done it. And also, there's a kind of, I was talking to my friend the other day about, it's this feeling of like, oh, I've done it now. I've done the thing I wanted to do, so that the pressure's off now. I sort of feel like, not that I want to quit or anything. It's just like, you know, I can look back and I succeeded in that sense.
Yeah.
I'm never going to regret it all. I'll just be like, yeah, well, absolutely. I made that sitcom. It got axed after one series, but yeah, I made it.
No, that is exactly the right way to think about it. And also, actually, releasing the tension a bit will only make you more creative. But give us a bit of a rundown, please. What is the sitcom about? What's it called? Oh, come on, give us the elevator spiel. Pitch.
Yeah. This is actually the first time I've spoken about it in public. It is called Buffering. It's on ITV2. It will come out after Love Island in the summer. In a very prestigious slot there'll be like 3 million people watching Love Island, and you know, they'll watch the first 10 seconds at least, and then we'll see a steady decline in ratings. And it's really just about how many people turn off. That's what we're looking at.
You have got to include a lot of nudity in the first couple of minutes of that first
episode.
Well,
you joke, but there is a pretty sexually explicit scene fairly early on, just to grab them, you know, just to go, look, please watch a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But yes, with Ian Sterling, the voice of Love Island. He's a very good friend of mine. We wrote it together, made it together, with some other brilliant writers as well, Eleanor Tiernan and Christine Robertson. And it's about a bunch of friends living in London together, sort of just trying to navigate their 20s, like just trying to work out. The way we sort of sell it is, it's just six young people trying to learn that it's okay to fail. That's, you know, like, you don't need, your life doesn't need to be perfect. You can fuck up loads and it's still fine. And it's just, the sitcom's that, them fucking up all the time, constantly, and they're still all right.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so, good. You know what, that isn't just for people in their 20s. People in their 40s need to hear that as well.
No, you can't. You've got to stop fucking up, mate.
That's what we should now do. Write some sort of sitcom for people in their 40s that does the exact opposite message. Say, so you
get your life in order, because this is embarrassing. Your TV's too big. You can't see it.
Excellent. All right.
Yes, I'm very excited about it.
That
is
great.
Yeah, please watch it.
Absolutely will. It's Buffering, is it?
Buffering, yes.
I will definitely, we're already plugging it on here, and I'm more than happy to give it a plug on my magic radio show, but I'm not sure how much the Venn diagram of listeners and viewers
works. Everyone we can get, you know. We're going to get a lot of Love Island fans watching it, but we could do with some of those magic listeners, you know.
Okay, all right. They're lovely people. They're good people.
I'm one of them.
All right, okay, Steve, let's keep on ploughing through then. Moving into 2016, a lovely Remington Barber beard trimmer, £20. You've splashed on that, my friend.
Yeah, yep. And that's ironic that I got into comedy before I'd really hit puberty. That's what that
Don't tell me that was your first shave.
It was my first electric shaver. Yeah, it was.
Well, I mean, I've only recently bought an electric shaver. They're a wonderful thing.
They are, actually. And that was a big moment when I realised you didn't have to dry shave every day. I didn't have to wet shave every day.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, people don't do that. People just trim it. And I felt, because I didn't my dad lived with me growing up, so I feel like I missed out on some of those basic man tips. And I feel like someone should have told me way early on that I could just trim my beard.
Well, you know, again, parallel lives. I remember being explained to about shaving by my I was at boarding school. So by the boarding master, housemaster, was explained to me how to shave when I was about 14, and there was no idea of dry shaving. It was all about wet shaving.
Yeah.
And
it's a time thing.
Well, maybe, but it occurs to me that, you know, if we were to compare our facial hair growth with, say, a lawn, like when you're wet shaving, essentially you're stripping the turf every once a week.
Yes, you are.
You know what I mean? Whereas
be good for your skin, can it?
It's not good for your skin. Your skin has this horrible, when you've had a proper wet shave, your skin has this horrible sort of putty like kind of quality, doesn't it? Well, after you've had a wet shave, it's not in a good place.
No, I think I'm going to stick with the dry show from now on. I don't look back now. I don't, you know. I mean, sure, the elation of shaving away the foam and seeing the skin underneath, that is, sure, that's a nice feeling.
Yeah, I take it. But not as a novelty, not as a kind of chore. It becomes a chore very quickly. You see, this is the great thing about this show. Every new item you buy is a rung on the ladder to improvement, right?
Yeah. Let me tell you, I bought that Remington one again. I'm very much a believer of, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So if it is broke, replace it. Just replace it. Yeah, yeah. Replace exactly the same one. So I did that. And if the battery fails, just use it at the mains. But I've only recently switched to, in fact, Ian Sterling as a present for the sitcom got me a new shaver, and it's a very nice new thing that but I'm not a man for change, you know, so it's quite a big shift for me to give up my Remington.
I'm not a fan of change, and also I always feel slightly annoyed when someone gets me, because the one you've bought here is a 20 quid, let's be honest, bit of a cheapo, and I bet Ian with his Love Island cash has bought you something really nice. What I don't like is when I upgrade devices, I feel bad for my former self who's lived for years with the less good thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I feel more emotional towards that Remington than I do. I think I'm more connected to that one, you know. It might be cheaper, but ultimately we were closer.
Mm. Well, yeah, exactly. That knows your face better than you, that thing. You
know. Yeah, it really does. And the other one that I replaced it with.
And the other one. July 2016, twice you've bought a lovely sleep mask, the Soft Snooze Deluxe larger size sleep mask.
Yes. Well, this is when I moved somewhere that didn't have curtains. And I, instead of buying curtains, I thought I'd buy curtains for my eyes. So that's what that is.
Well, what about, I mean... I have many questions. This is such a man approach to a problem like that. That's like, I haven't got a sofa, so I'm going to strap a cushion to my ass.
Yeah, I guess it is like that. And that's, you know, I don't begrudge someone doing that. But it was a rented house. So I'm not buying landlords some curtains. So I can't take the curtains with me, but I can take a face mask with me, can I?
When you put it like that, Steve.
Yeah.
You're getting very defensive about the...
Well, if I'm honest, Tom, you went on the offensive. You were pretty condescending about the old face mask, but served me very well.
I'm not condescending about the product. I'm condescending about the fact that you bought it because you didn't have any curtains and you know, you were living like you were in a hostel. That's all I'm getting condescending about, you know.
Yeah.
Come on, you were 27 years old at this point.
What year is it?
2017. 16.
Oh, yeah, that's 27. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's, it doesn't reflect great on me, that. But what can you do?
How long did you go without curtains for?
Well, the whole time I lived in that place. At least a year and a half, I think. Yeah.
What about getting changed? Did it look out onto anything?
It was a basement, so no, it didn't look out onto anything, but it weirdly let in more light than you'd expect for a basement.
Yeah.
So, that was the issue. So no, getting changed was fine, but that wasn't a problem. But the light in the evenings, in the summer months, sure. If you're wondering, by the way, I have now got curtains.
Okay, good.
And
I was going to say,
a face mask.
Okay, good.
just talking about getting around that Steve doesn't have curtains.
Yeah. A lot of gossip. You know what? People from tabloid newspapers listen to this podcast. That could be the headline. Just FYI.
He's got a sitcom, but can't afford some nets. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. What else have we got in 2017? Lovely 21st of December. This looks like a Christmas present. The Yankee Candle spiced orange jar.
Absolutely. That is a last minute panic Christmas present for my ex-girlfriend.
Well, okay, I'm glad it's an ex, because it was only £4.59. That is, with all due respect,
bless her,
quite a cheap present.
Bless her. That is, yeah, that's not good, is it? I think it was probably not the main present, but I can't guarantee. I can't remember what I got that year. But I think that stinks of looking at what presents you've got. You've wrapped them up and you've gone, that's not enough. I need just another solid thing there. And that's what that candle is.
Present Noya. It's worth pointing out, Steve, that 4 days earlier,
what did I buy?
The Yankee Candle Summer Scoop Jar Candle Medium. So you've bought one of the candles. It's obviously then arrived at your house and you thought, that's good. I know what I'll do. I'll get her another one in a different smell.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously what's happened. You've got to do something to make the room nice, because no curtains. So You need it to smell nice with a candle.
That's such a man approach to buying presents. This is a good present. I will duplicate. I will double down.
I think they might have been for different people. I think maybe I got it for my cousin, God, or something like that.
Right, so in that case, it gets worse because it means you got the medium-sized one for your cousin and the small one for your girlfriend.
Potentially. And ultimately, that might explain why she's my ex-girlfriend.
Fuck. 18th of November, Durex Thin Feel Condoms, pack of 30.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what that is? It's because I'm terrified of buying condoms in the shop.
Of course you are. We all are. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just don't want people to know I'm sexually active. So I buy them online in bulk, you know? And also, genuinely true, if you go on the condom section of Amazon, it does offer you used and new. genuinely true, though.
That's good to know.
I don't, I'm all keen for a bargain, you know, but that seems too much for me.
What's the photographs of products game like on that part of the Amazon website?
yeah, just split condoms. We'll give discount.
That's good to know. Good to know. Okay, good. All right, we're crashing on through now. We're in 2018, Steve. You've bought a lot of wooden hangers.
Ah, yes. I remember this very clearly. This was, I guess, part of growing up. Probably had curtains by now. And I was thinking, I want to be the sort of person who has matching hangers for all of my clothes.
That guy. That guy. Tom Cruise, basically.
Yeah, basically the king.
Yeah.
And I thought, because I had a lot of those wiry, shitty ones and just like plasticky ones. And I was like, you know what? This is quite an easy thing to solve. I can afford hangers. Let's just buy wooden hangers. And you know what, mate? I've never looked back. It's one of the best decisions I've ever made. Every day I look at those wooden hangers and think, that is fantastic. I am a better human being than most people. That's what I think.
I cannot tell you how many times I've gone out with shoulder nipples. Do you know about the shoulder nipple syndrome?
No.
So I have used either hangers from my wife's clothes, and on one occasion a hanger from my child's wardrobe, which I stole.
Wow.
Put a freshly laundered T-shirt on it, and because the hanger is small, the T-shirt hangs off it at a point about halfway towards the shoulder. So when you put the T-shirt on, it stretches the material and you get shoulder nipples.
Ah, yes.
And I've lost count of the number of times I've been out with shoulder nipples. So if you see anyone out there with shoulder nipples, you'll know they're not a Steve Bugea kind of guy.
They're not a wooden hanger person.
They're not a wooden hanger person.
You know what, Tom? If you want, as a present, mate, while you're on my Amazon account right now, you just click on those hangers and order yourself some hangers. Go on. As a little...
Steve, are you serious? This is...
Yeah, do it. Just order yourself some hangers, mate.
God, I'm getting emotional. In all my time of doing this podcast, no one's ever done that. No,
well, I'm serious.
Done that.
I would love it if every morning you got a jumper off a hanger and thought of me. Just every single morning.
Okay.
Do it.
Okay.
Just
right.
Click on it and do it. It's fine.
That's really kind of you. Thanks, mate.
How many are you ordering? Just so we know.
Three packs of four. Chuck in.
55 hangers.
Chuck in a Samsung Galaxy. Great. Thanks, mate. Thank you. All right. Listen, here's what we're going to do as we get towards the end of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Steve, this has been an absolute delight tracking your successful journey to comedy brilliance and, of course, to eventually moving back to a market town.
Yes, inevitably.
Not that there's anything wrong with market towns, have to say that. Now, let's do a quick lockdown special. Shall we? Should we have a little bit of lockdown love? 2020 came along and stopped all of our lives, of course. And you know what? Over the year, not many orders, only 30-odd orders. Yeah. So that's pretty sensible, I'll be honest. I've seen much worse than that.
Okay.
You have bought, I mean, we're talking about hard drives, a 2 terabyte external hard drive. Two terabytes.
It's a good little blue thing. I've got it right in front of me now. It served me very well.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, I do think there's I should do a Patreon special, which is just hard drive chat.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Yeah, I think that would go down really well.
Really, really well. People would definitely pay for that. What about this? 19th of May 2020, in the middle of the lockdown, you bought the Confidence Code. Tell us about the Confidence Code.
Oh, right, yes. And this is a book. So I had an idea that I sort of wanted to write about confidence. I'm sort of fascinated by where confidence comes from. I go to therapy quite a lot and I sort of talk about low self-esteem and those sort of issues that all comics sort of suffer with, or everyone really overall. Mm. And I'm sort of fascinated by where confidence comes from and whether you can sort of manufacture it, I guess. Mm. And it was something I wanted to write about. And then so I found that book, but that book in particular is for women.
What
women should know about confidence. And the whole book is like women in the workplace getting shouted over by men. And I'm honestly reading it going, yes, that's me. I'm like that. I don't stand up for myself. I don't assert myself in, you know, and I always focus on the negative things I've done and not the positive. And I honestly related it to it so hard, but I'm conscious that it was not aimed at me. And I almost feel bad. I feel like the authors, who are two very successful women, I believe, like a Google exec and something, I feel like they would be angry if they knew that I read it. You know, they're like, God, you're a man. You've got everything already. You don't need this.
So, well, okay. So for example, when you were in the process of writing the sitcom, which is very, very sort of, you have to collaborate a lot when you're doing that. And do you find yourself not standing up for stuff because you think, oh, I don't want to have the argument and I don't want them to hate me?
Maybe it's a little bit that. I think the biggest thing for me was I just never felt like I was good, you know, like I always felt like an imposter, whatever I was doing. And I think honestly in the last maybe year, 6 months, a year, I feel much more content. I'm much more like, no, you know what? I've done really good things. I'm proud of those things. I've also done some bad things, but they don't define me. And I think that honestly, that book helped loads. And there was a few other things I read that were like it, but just like having a core sense of self that's based on not needing validation to feel good, basically. That was really where the confidence comes from.
Knowing that you're good at something is like, that's got to be the hardest trick in life. And when I say it's really important, the word knowing is doing a lot of work in that sentence, because you can sort of think it. I think I'm quite good at certain things, but actually that's riddled with doubt and that's flawed.
Exactly. That's where I was, yeah.
I don't know that I'm good at stuff.
The trick I learned in the book was to pinpoint moments when you have definitely been good at it, like objective moments. You know, like, so say if it's stand-up, it's a moment where you've just nailed a gig or a script that's, you know, got good feedback or, you know, that kind of thing. And just like remember them, write them down. So whenever your confidence goes a little bit, you just go back to that moment. You go, well, no, I was good then. Like maybe I've had a bad day today, but it doesn't define me. The bad day doesn't completely cripple my confidence. It's like you look back at the good things.
Yeah. A very good system until you realize that the time you've written down you were good at something is now sort of like an old yellowed parchment stuck on the wall.
Yeah, so long ago.
No, it's excellent. It's excellent advice for, you know, obviously it's not just people who work in the creative
world.
It's
all everything.
The stuff, all the things. Everything.
And it's friends parenting, things as well. Whatever. It's like, yes. Am I a good friend? And then you think back to a moment like, no, I was a good friend then. I definitely was, and I can do that again. You know, it's like that. Teaching yourself, if you've done it before, you can do it again. So you know, you don't have that imposter syndrome of like, oh, it's just, I've lucked out. It's like, no, you didn't luck out. You can do it again. You can replicate it.
Yes. Good. Okay, I like this. Good positive vibes at the end.
Sorry, I got quite deep, didn't it? Not funny stuff at the end. Just
fine. I like that. We've got a Yankee Candle. Fuck. Oh, this is awkward. So December 2020, you bought a Yankee Candle. Who's this for,
that
Steve?
That will be for my current girlfriend. Bigger? Is it bigger, at least?
It is. It's £23.99.
Well, there you go. I've learned my lesson.
Talk about a happy ending. For the economists, we can measure out your life using simple economics. For the girl who sadly it didn't work out, you spent £4 on a candle for her at Christmas. And for the girl who you're still with today, £23.99. The facts, the maths don't lie. That's very pleasing, Steve.
And the candle's still burning, you know, still there.
Oh God, that's beautiful. That might be the most beautiful ending to any episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Who knew that you could be so happy with a Yankee Candle, large scented candle, lavender and oak, mate, burning up to 150 hours and I'm adding this on, for life. Oh, beautiful.
Wow.
Oh,
man. Yeah.
Listen, Steve Bajaya, I think you're absolutely brilliant. Buffering the sitcom is out now. You're going to be out there gigging your absolute tits off in the future as well. What's your Twitter bits for people to all give you the follows?
It's at Steve Bajaya, and Instagram is Steve Bajaya Comedy. Bajaya is a nightmare spelling. It's Bugajar. Bugejar. Bugajar.
Bugajar. Steve Bugajar, thank you so much for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom. It's been really fun.
And thank you so much for the hangers. That's really, really kind of you.
You're welcome. Think of me every day.
Oh, what a lovely boy. He's not a boy. He is a man. He is a man. We know he's a man now because of the razors.
and the candles and the condoms. So listen, thank you very much. That's the end of this episode. I'm going to, as I said at the beginning of the episode, I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. I'm interviewing loads of people over the next 2 weeks. So we are stacking up with new apps for part two of this season. So help yourself to a little half term, little hiatus. Listen back to old episodes. Do other things. See your families, guys. Yeah. Be with the people you love. But then obviously when we're back, sack them off and just listen to this. All right, all the best.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Hancock, and I host From Queer to Eternity, a new podcast exploring what it means to be queer, where we have conversations like this.
I look at younger generations and go, you can just Google this stuff.
The fact that the only mention of queerness was don't get AIDS.
If I'd been marrying a girl, that would not have happened.
Maybe we can find a universality that we weren't aware of before.
That's why this podcast is so great, because actually, well, I guess we just don't think to speak of this stuff, and yet it's part of our fabric.
From Queer to Eternity, available to listen to now from the Great Big Owl Company.